Is the threat outside greater than the one within?
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Anthology presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and if this is your first time listening, ordinarily, Anthology is a podcast where I review The Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer and other classic and contemporary science fiction anthology series. But in this bonus episode series, I am reviewing Amazon Prime's new sci-fi anthology series, Solos, created by David Weil. And for archives of all of my episodes, you can visit anthologypod.com. And you can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod. And you can also follow me on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. And ordinarily, this is the point where I will do my spiel about Patreon. I have a Patreon that you can get exclusive content on, but I'm actually going to try something a little bit different, and it's going to be embarrassing. This is something that I came up with at like 1 a.m. a few nights ago. So in lieu of my long-winded, like, two-minute spiel about Patreon, I'm going to kind of condense that into a specific type of thing. I might cut this out. I don't know. It might be too embarrassing. But here's my spiel for Patreon. Are you a listener of The Obsessive Viewer and its subsidiary podcasts, Anthology and Tower Junkies? Do you find yourself wanting more content from these podcasters? You may be eligible for compensation in the form of bonus content on Patreon. Hi, I'm Matt Hurt from Hurt, Roll, and Associates. Due to a recent settlement with Obsessive Viewer Podcasts, you can be granted access to hundreds of extra content, including B-roll episodes, commentary tracks, and early access to full episodes. For a small retainer, from $1 or $2 per month, or up to $5 or $10 per month, you can get that extra podcast content you deserve. Just go to patreon.com/obsessiveviewer to sign up. Again, that website is patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Go there right now. Okay, so that's my whole law commercial spiel. I'm stupid, but anyway, all that can be found at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. And as I've been saying these last few episodes, the $10 patrons on Patreon got access to all 7 of my bonus episode reviews of this series of Solos, day one on May 21st. So right now, if you're thinking like, oh God, I need to hear more of Matt's dumbass spiels about Patreon and stuff, where can I get more? You can pledge $10 on Patreon and get instant access to the rest of this bonus episode series, along with some unreleased stuff and everything, and tons of extra content. So anyway, check that out, patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. We did just recently, as of this release, we got a new Patreon supporter named John. I'm not sure if he's an Anthology listener, Tower Junkies listener, or Obsessive Viewer listener, but thank you, John, for pledging on Patreon. So, today on the show, I'm continuing my 7-part bonus episode series for the aforementioned sci-fi anthology series Solos, which premiered all of its episodes on May 21st, 2021 on Amazon Prime Video. And in this episode specifically, I'll be reviewing Sasha, which is episode 4 of the series, and it stars Uzo Aduba as a woman who's become accustomed to a hermetic lifestyle carved out in the aftermath of a global pandemic and struggles to believe years later that the threat is now in the past for good. And just right from the jump, I'm just going to say, in my review, I'm going to be spoiling the entire episode of Sasha. And so make sure you go watch it before listening to this episode, because the entire episode will be spoiled in this review. So with that warning out of the way, this episode stars Uzo Aduba as Sasha, and she's known primarily for Orange is the New Black. She also... tangential and everything, but she had one appearance on the show Comedy Bang Bang, which I'm a huge fan of, and co-starring as Zen, the companion bot from Stay Homes, is Jack Quaid. And I knew that his voice was vaguely familiar. If I'm not mistaken, I actually am surprised I don't have it in my notes, but Jack Quaid is in The Boys on Amazon Prime. So keeping it in that Amazon Prime family. And writer for this episode was Tori Sampson. And not only is this their only writing credit, but this is also the sole credit on their entire IMDb page, which I think is pretty cool and interesting. I don't know much about Tori, but, that's pretty interesting. And director for this episode was David Weil, the creator of the show. And so, given the structure of this series, obviously there's not much more to run down in terms of talent, so I'm going to go ahead and go into my feelings as a viewer on Sasha. So my overall feelings, and then I'll go beat for beat through the episode. So my overall feelings is that this episode was kind of a mixed bag for me. Kind of in broad terms, it represents the kind of art that I honestly don't want to see and have not wanted to see and was afraid of seeing come out of like the post-COVID era, like post-pandemic COVID era. It's just throughout all of last year when everyone was working from home and stuff before the vaccine and everything, I just kept thinking like, oh God, we're going to see a ton of art being made that's in reference to the pandemic, which is fine. Like, that's fine. But my fear was that it would be something that's just a little too surface level, not enough subtext, not enough subtlety, not anything too profound to say about it because we lived it and everything. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm priming myself for pandemic filmmaking fatigue. Which, if you want a good counter to that, there is actually a short film that recently played at Indie Film Fest here in Indianapolis called Alone in April, I think All Alone in April. Let me look it up real quick. But it is a short film made during quarantine in California. And it's really great. It's like a quarantine love story kind of story. And it's really inventive, very clever. And it doesn't suffer the kind of failings of this type of story and everything. Okay, yes, it's called All Alone in April. It's a 9-minute short film. I don't know when or where you'd be able to find it since Indie Film Fest has ended, but the writer and the director is Ace Norton. Writers are Ace Norton and Sana van der Linden. So seek that out and check it out if you can, if it's available to you. But anyway, back to my thoughts on Sasha. So while this episode is not necessarily about COVID, obviously, there's also not enough detail or world building to separate it from our real life events. So instead of being a sci-fi story with a subtle allegory for the global pandemic that we've been in for the last year plus, it kind of takes, since it doesn't, instead of being a subtle allegory for that, it takes our quarantine and lockdown experience and only tweaks a few things, the timeline and everything, and just tweaks a few elements of it, and then puts it against a sci-fi backdrop. And I don't feel like there's enough there to really differentiate it from what we've gone through as a community of human beings and transposing it into art. I don't think there was enough care for that. So that kind of was a ding against this episode. However, I really dug the kind of dark tone that this episode takes on in its second half, because it kind of becomes about Sasha's paranoia and showcases what has happened to her view of the world without socializing and without society at large. What happens when she has this cabin fever that she's had for 20 years? It's pretty interesting. However, I do have some caveats with that as well, because it also, while at the same time I appreciate that, it also becomes, again, another instance of the show not being very subtle or not having enough cleverness baked into the subtlety of the allegory that it's presenting, because then it just kind of becomes this inverse of some of the stuff that really bothered me about the real world. And it's May 2021 and the stay-at-home orders in Indianapolis, which is my kind of marker for the beginning of the pandemic for me personally, was March 16th, 2020. And from then until now, even today, I still have this just anger toward people that are just completely selfish pieces of shit, essentially. Like, I saw a post today about someone, someone shared a post about how, like, oh, the mainstream media is sharing or is putting forth this quote-unquote science about the vaccine and everything, even though it's an experimental drug. It's like, fuck you. If you don't give a shit about anyone else but yourself, or you don't give a shit about your children or anything, fine, whatever. Just call it what it is. Don't pretend like you know what the fuck you're talking about. Just, you know, say, hey, I'm a shitty human being and a shitty parent. Anyway, hopefully that's not too hostile, but if it is, I don't care, because it's just fucking get the vaccine. As someone who had COVID in December and suffered for it with two weeks and now can, like, still has residual problems from it, it's a fucking needle in the arm twice unless you get the Johnson & Johnson. It's not a big fucking deal. So anyway, as far as Solos as a science fiction anthology show is concerned, this is something that I kind of appreciated about this episode. And then again, I also kind of struggled with it. I feel like I just completely changed the tone of the entire podcast. like I'm a father scolding his children. So I'm sorry. But as far as Solos as a sci-fi anthology series is concerned, this episode felt very much in line with, like, a Black Mirror episode. And even, like, the 2019 Twilight Zone reboot series, it kind of felt, like, in line with the themes and the tones of those two series. And I mean that as a compliment, honestly, because by the end, I really like the ending of the episode in comparison to the rest of the episode. So, anyway... So anyway, it also feels like, to go back to my last point, it does feel like Sasha's paranoia and her, kind of conspiracy leanings are just demonstrated as an inverse of the kind of conspiracy and paranoia that I saw on social media all throughout the last year plus. And it's frustrating because that immediately makes me not want to sympathize or root for Sasha, because it is just I don't feel like there is a three-dimensional character in that kind of plot line or in that kind of that arc, because it's so. I think I'm just feeling residual anger as clearly about that from the real world. So it's kind of hard for me to sympathize with a character who is so paranoid and conspiracy minded when I have been battling that with people in my own family and people on social media and everything throughout the last year. So I think that kind of created a little bit of a disconnect for me with this episode. But those are my kind of overall feelings as a viewer on the episode. So let's go right into my review of Sasha. So right off the bat, I really like the opening voiceover from Morgan Freeman. He says something to the effect of, "Is the threat outside worse than the one inside?" And it sets this tone to the story about someone being their own worst enemy and letting their fears and paranoia get the better of them, which I really like that as a concept. Again, I had some caveats with it. I had some disconnects with it, which I'll get into as I go through my review, but for the most part, this is a very intriguing setup and a very intriguing kind of window into the episode from the outset. Having said that, I do find the episode slightly peculiar because it was made during the pandemic and has clear allegories to the pandemic and quarantining and stay-at-home orders that we've all went through over the last year. But, and again, I'm going to kind of rehash some of the points that I made before I screamed at the kids previously in this episode. But since this episode of Solos is all about mistrust and paranoia, it's about our own collective experience in 2020. And it made me wonder, like, what is this actually saying? Because it presents a character who thinks she's being manipulated and thinks she's being coerced into breaking quarantine so that she can die or be changed or what have you. She's her own worst enemy. And so in trying to create a compelling drama out of this characterization, it sometimes feels like the show is accidentally taking the side of those who have resisted quarantining and resisted social distancing and have resisted wearing masks and everything. Just yesterday, my work brought more people into the office. And, like, I saw one person who, obviously I'm not going to name drop on here, I don't think he listens to any of my podcasts, but I've seen him post on social media some like just vague like anti-mask or anti quarantine stuff and everything. And like, as of this recording, the CDC last week did state that it's that that they do think it's okay for people who have been vaccinated to be to go around maskless, I think. But that is also that different businesses and different places of business can operate under their own kind of guidance and everything. So my workplace still has a mandate in our office where if you're not at your desk, wear a mask and everything. And so I saw this guy a couple of times just walking around without a mask. And I'm like, should I snitch on this guy? Anyway, so this is, I don't know. Anyway, this episode presents a character that thinks she's being manipulated and coerced into being quarantined, into breaking quarantine. And again, like, I feel like it feels like it's accidentally taking the side of those who resisted those social, guidelines throughout the real life pandemic and everything. And it just kind of creates this weird sensation in me that I don't like. Like I said, I have been just very, very aggressively anti these people, like anti those types of people who have that attitude toward basic, just basic instruction to prevent the virus from getting to a point where it has gotten and everything. I'm just so vehemently against them that to have a character that has that same kind of personality traits and quirks and positions and everything, but being presented as a protagonist that we're supposed to root for and everything, it really kind of just grated on my nerves and really put me at a disadvantage for really appreciating or sympathizing with Sasha's journey in this episode. So anyway, we get the first scene is Zen, voiced by Jack Quaid, who has just such a phenomenal voice. It's very calming and soothing. And then at the end of the episode, when it ramps up and with more anxiety and fear, it's a really good vocal performance from Jack Quaid. And so he reveals that, it's been something like 7,000 and some days since the quarantine, and it's her birthday, so happy birthday. And he suggests that she goes outside. And it's like the first kind of subtle indication that, okay, well, you know, maybe you should go outside and everything. Just kind of hinting at that to try to get her to go outside on her own volition. And so Sasha is sitting there reading, and she's like a bit of her wine goes down the wrong pipe, and she immediately starts choking. And what I thought was interesting was Zen just immediately is like, oh, don't worry, it's just a choke, it's not a cough, and that doesn't mean that she has a virus. And she's like, maybe I should send someone to do a nose swab for you and everything. And I don't know, like, this episode overall, I really was not feeling this episode. So when that happens, she kind of brushes it aside. And this is kind of demonstrating that the companion bot that is Zen from the Stay Homes Corporation or whatever is kind of working overtime to be comforting and helpful and everything. And I don't know what to really make of this, except that it's maybe just a design flaw of the bot, or it's kind of a calculated thing to try to be as hands-on as possible so that she can believe him to make her leave and everything. So I don't know. But anyway, so following that, Sasha gets very testy with Zen about the repetition of their daily routine. And this is the first point in the episode where I really felt like this wasn't my cup of tea. Like, I was, from what I've seen of Uzo Aduba, she's a fine actor. Like, she does a good job. She's very talented and everything. But I found myself at multiple times in this episode just being very surprisingly distracted by her performance, because this show at its center is built around monologues and single actor performances. So there's this built-in live theater quality to the show that in previous episodes I have been all about and very impressed with. If you've listened to my other reviews, I'm just glowing with praise about how much it makes me think of live theater and how much I miss live theater the few times I'm able to go see it. And it just has that kind of appeal of that, like, actor's kind of energy. And like that, like that's been great in these past episodes, but in this one it just seems like Uzo Aduba is steering a little too hard into that style and tone. Like it feels like her character has unneeded tics. So this just boggled my mind a little bit. But when she's talking about the repetition and she's like kind of screaming at the little space in front of her, she does this thing where it looks like she's pantomiming taking shoes off, but she isn't. And it's just, it feels like a really weird acting choice. Like she needs to convey irritation and wants to use her surroundings, but there's no prompt to anchor that physical performance. So instead she just opted to mime taking off shoes. It's really, really weird and doesn't make any sense to me in the performance. And it was just really distracting. And there are other things that I'll get to throughout the episode, but there are other things that just really, really just took me out of it and made this a much less immersive episode than it could have been because of these little ticks and these little elements that just didn't really fit together with me and I couldn't really make sense of. And also, on the other hand, or in addition to that, I kind of think that it hampers the episode to have Zen as the bot, like displays and interfaces scattered throughout the room, because it gives Aduba freedom to react and gesticulate at different places in the room, which is fine. But at the same time, it feels really confusing and even a little bit sloppy, because compare it to like Peg's episode, having a single display from which the AI was speaking, and having Tom, like in Tom's episode, having a different, like having his robot Tom right in front of him, and then also way back to episode one, Leia having two fixed screens on display at fixed points in the room, like that just kind of put like a fixed place for the actor to perform against and to react against. But this episode feels slightly more chaotic in that Zen is practically omnipresent in the space. So Uzo Aduba is able to run and gesticulate and do all of these things at different interfaces. It just seems like she's like reacting to a void, or she's acting toward a void. And it really makes this very like big disconnect in my mind. And I also, on that same subject, I also don't think that I like just how present Zen is, because it basically turns this episode into a two-hander, which feels like it kind of goes against the central ethos of the show in general. And I might be getting ahead of myself because I haven't watched the final episode of the season, but I kind of feel like it could potentially undercut the actual two-person episode that we get at the end of the season with Stewart's episode with Morgan Freeman and Dan Stevens. But it kind of becomes too much of a reaction thing, and it lessens the kind of impact of the monologues of this episode, because we have the voice work of Jack Quaid, who again has a great voice, it does a great job of voice acting in this episode, but we have him reacting to her, and it just kind of feels like it doesn't really, again, anchor that performance in any meaningful way to have her actually react off of something that's kind of omnipresent in the space. So then Zen says that she might want to go see her friend and everything. And this sets Sasha off because it's a trigger word for her. She says not to say that unless she says it and everything. And she goes on this rant. And again, she's walking around the room. She's gesticulating. She's moving her arms around. She's just very, very animated. And I mean, the dialogue is great and her energy is good, but there's just something. I just really don't like her performance here. Like, it feels, again, a little too animated, and it seems like she's playing up this theatricality to the performance, and I don't really understand why. It just seems much, it doesn't seem like a logical reaction for that character. It seems more like, oh, an actor doing actor-y things in a space and everything. It just felt, I didn't really key into the emotional part of the story or of the character, because I was too busy being like, oh, this is an actor acting. So I don't know. So her rant about how Stay Homes is apparently the company that did the whole stay at home orders and everything or whatever. She goes on a rant about how they have been manipulating her and everyone into going out and getting sick. And again, this is where I'm going to go more in depth, maybe not more in depth since I already talked about it, but this is where the aggression of the episode feels like the inversion of the, frankly, dipshit assholes who were upset about the shutdowns. Like, I remember, like, those dumbass videos of the people, like, stand, like, going to, like, the store without masks and everything and saying, like, oh, we want to go, I want to go and get, I want to go get supplies and I can't because, and this is a free country and everything. It's like, fuck you. Like, it's a fucking virus that will eventually kill thousands and thousands and thousands, millions of people, or, like, worldwide, like, over a million people and everything, and you're worried about fucking gardening tools and everything that you're not able to because, hey, this is America. Fuck you. Anyway, so Sasha says that, again, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Sasha says that Nia, her friend, sent her videos of the outside, and she shows them to Zen, and it's like chaos and violence and everything, and Zen says that those videos are from 20 years ago, and Sasha just kind of brushes it off and everything, because everything that Zen says, Sasha is not buying it. She's not buying into it. She's not picking up what he's putting down. She's not buying what he's selling and everything. And it's, that makes the kind of two-hander aspect of this episode a little bit more easier to swallow, because it is an interesting kind of, depiction dynamic between them and everything. But again, it's sullied by this whole, and maybe this is a fault on my viewing of it, but it's just marred by this knowledge that she's representing, like, the inverse of the people that I just have no patience for after fucking dealing with them for a year. So anyway, Sasha then talks about her life and about the beginning of the pandemic. And this is good backstory. Like, it is good backstory. This is maybe my favorite part of Uzo Aduba's performance, because it is very much grounded in the history of the character. She talks about how everyone prayed that they weren't the next one to get the virus. And she goes on to say that she sees her life in two parts, pre-quarantine and then the second part of her life is her stay home life and everything. And she talks about how she made the perfect home and created her perfect stay home and everything. And that's what's kept her going for 20 years, apparently. And to her credit, it is a very beautiful space. And she also laments not having a pool. And she says that Nia, when they were kids, that she had a pool and she taught her how to swim and everything. And again, like, kind of, there's a part of me that feels like this is compelling acting, this is compelling writing, this is compelling backstory, but it also feels like filler or kind of hollow to me. I can't really put my finger on why. I kind of just think that Uzo Aduba's performance just is not really selling it for me, and maybe that's a byproduct of me not being into her rants and everything against Zen in the previous scenes before this, but really it already put me at a disadvantage for this episode and for this kind of dynamic in this episode. But I do appreciate some of the filmmaking techniques here. So, like, the color of the scene as she's talking about the pool and everything, it shifts to this blue hue. And I think that was a really nice choice, since she's talking about the swimming and the pool and everything. I just thought that was really pretty cool as a visual kind of thing. And the blue hue is lifted after she gets out of her whole reflective moment and everything, and it brings us back to reality. And so Zen is still kind of pointing her into the direction of going outside by saying that, you know, you probably want to see Nia again. And Sasha immediately snaps back at him and says, like, she wants to know why he's trying to get her to leave. And here's another thing. This is the other big thing that I was really distracted by in this episode, because here she does this fake British accent when she's mocking him. And I've got to say, it comes out of fucking nowhere. Like, it halted the whole episode for me, honestly, because she's saying, like, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, chum, or I don't know what she says or anything. I don't know any Britishisms, but she does this accent and I'm like, I can't connect where, like, what that it's about, like, what the deal is with that, because there's nothing in the episode to indicate or to set that up or anything. It just seems like it's completely out of left field, and it made me wonder, like, was Jack Quaid originally the voice of Zen? like did they recast him after they shot the episode and just not bother with doing that? Because that's really the only explanation that I can come up with, given the information that is presented in the episode. And I mean, there is precedent for that, because the movie Her, which is one of my favorite movies, had that same thing. I think Samantha Morton did the voiceover work. And her voice is what Joaquin Phoenix is playing off of in every scene that he's in. And then in post-production, they brought in Scarlett Johansson, because I guess Samantha Morton's voice wasn't working. And so, I mean, there's precedent for that. And I wonder if that's what happened here, but I don't know. Even with that kind of length of rope that I'm giving it to connect, like I'm putting a little bit into the episode than what is there, it still feels sloppy and weird and out of place. And it recurs later in the episode, and it halts it for me. It's just really distracting. And I guess there could also be an argument could also be made that maybe Zen was British before the update that he references, because he talks about how there's been an update and everything, and everything is a lot. It's a big update for the stay home bots and everything. So I kind of wonder, is this a new voice for the companion bot? But I feel like that is giving the show a little bit too much leeway, because there's just not enough information in the episode to back that theory. And the fact that I would have to make such a big leap myself just to make sense of this weird anomalistic, I don't know if that's a word, but this anomaly of dialogue, in order to make sense of that, I don't know. It's indicative of there needing to be much more information in the episode that's just not there. So I don't know. That was just kind of bothersome. So anyway, so Sasha's paranoia and her distrust of stay homes comes through again in another big energy outburst here. And I think at this point with this outburst, this is where I just realized I just don't buy it. I just don't buy into this character. I don't buy into the mental anguish that she's facing, because maybe it's underwritten or maybe it's underwritten and overperformed, but I'm just not buying into it. So she talks about how stay homes has the capability to create tragedy, and they have every political and financial motivation to do so. And then there's also this weird thing that she's like, everything that I've read. And then there's a weird pause, like that's the complete sentence. And then she continues after the pause, like mid sentence. It was just kind of really weird. Maybe that's an editing gaffe or what, but it just, again, that was distracting, and it really kind of just took me out of the episode. And once again, it's just this weird conspiracy paranoia angle that reads like the inverse of our real life assholes and dipshits in the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's not necessarily that it doesn't track in this episode, because it makes sense that when you look at the character of Sasha and her struggle throughout the episode, it tracks that she would be distrustful of this. It tracks that she would think the worst of stay homes and think the worst of the companion bot and everything. It tracks. I just don't care to track it. because I'm fully willing to admit is my own personal failings as a viewer of this, and not separating it from real life experience. But 2020 was fucking exhausting. Like, it was exhausting seeing people willfully ignoring science, willfully ignoring logic and reasoning, just because they didn't want to accept that they might have to disrupt their dumb, mouth-breathing, shitty lives in the interest of public health and safety. And I say that as someone who did all of the things to be proactive and being precautious about COVID and everything, and I fucking caught it in December, and I hated it. So fuck you if you didn't pay attention to any of the orders or anything, or didn't think it was a big deal. Anyway, again, not mad, just disappointed. This episode, again, is presenting the inverse of that. So Sasha is paranoid and distrustful of the reason and logic behind letting her out of quarantine, because she's been there for 20 years. And I think that that's an interesting hook, and that's a very interesting idea to present in this type of story. It's just not followed through that well because it is marred by our, by the kind of subtext or the allegory to our real life experience. And I think the intention is to be a clever mirror reversal, or like a cute or clever mirror reversal of our real world pandemic when viewed in context of this episode. Like, I feel like the intention is to have it be this interesting, like, reversal that, okay, this person who is quarantined is now distrustful of being coming out of quarantine, while idiots in the real world were distrustful of being, of quarantining, so they went ahead and spread the virus and, you know, got a bunch of people killed. And I think that that's the intention, but I don't think it's as clever as the show wants it to be. And it ultimately just feels like it lacks any subtlety or subtext in general, because it's, again, it's presenting this, this kind of inversion of something that has been discussed over the last year ad nauseum and debated and angry yelling at over the last year. But it's not, it's only reversing that and then slapping this kind of sci-fi backdrop on it, and it's not enough to really make it subtext. It's just textual. It's not subtle enough to make us kind of work for finding that. So I don't know. But after her kind of another outburst and everything, there's this really cool, I think this is actually at the separate point where she says, "I've read," and then it has that weird break, and then she completes the thought in the next shot. But in that next shot, there's this really cool Dutch angle as she talks about Stay Holmes's supposed history of testing and infecting and killing people and everything. I thought that was kind of cool, a cool kind of visual flair. I thought that was kind of neat. But then again, it's kind of marred by another weird ass British accent when she mocks Zen that comes out of nowhere, and it's incredibly distracting, grinds it to a halt, makes me just really, takes me out of any type of immersive quality of this episode that I could have mustered. So that was a bummer. And so Zen tries to tell her that she can trust him. And he is, again, Jack Quaid is very calming and very soothing and everything. And her retort to that is to say that there's no anxiety or fear in his voice. So that is one of the reasons why she chooses that she can't trust him or anything, because she doesn't believe that, because there's no anxiety or fear in his voice. And I felt like that was a pretty compelling element, because she is talking to an artificial intelligence that is designed to keep her calm and everything. So that is an interesting kind of back and forth that, like, well, I can't trust you because you don't have that anxiety or fear in your voice. You're not human. And I thought that was really interesting. So then she kind of does a little monologue about the start of quarantine. And she talks about how it was sudden and instant. And she had this very fearful video chat with Nia. And she felt helpless that she couldn't help her. And she also talks about how she and Nia have the same birthday and how they went swimming and she taught her how to swim and everything. And all of that kind of comes together to present a really compelling description of day one of the stay. And still, it's a little too theatrical for my taste. I don't think there's any way to get around that, or I don't think there's any part that really divorces me from that. But it's compelling and tragic all the same, because the way that she talks about how helpless she felt with like watching Nia break down and watching her without being able to comfort her, that is a very interesting human response. That is a very tragic and sad reaction to seeing someone that you love being in a helpless situation and not being able to help them. That is kind of at the heart of it. It is this community aspect, this society aspect, societal aspect that, you know, we're a community. We're like human beings are, you know, a family of a species, and to have them disconnected and have them not be able to help one another is tragic in its own right. So anyway, Zen then tries again to get her to consider leaving. And she again talks about her paranoia and her distrust of it, saying that the things I've heard about your reintegration councils and all of this stuff, like she talks about the things that she's heard. And again, it's this paranoia and conspiracy angle that just doesn't do it for me, specifically because, like I said, I've seen just countless people just completely completely just disregard everything about the quarantine and everything and the stay at home orders and everything associated with COVID-19. So to see a character that I'm supposed to root for do that same thing, I'm just not going to buy into it because I've lived it. I've lived that experience and I can't. I've reached a point where I cannot entertain someone who is going to just listen to hearsay or listen to listen to rumors and everything, conjecture and confirmation bias and everything. Like that fucking Facebook post today about how, something about how like, oh, mainstream media is presenting the science and, you know, this experimental vaccine and everything instead of catching it and getting natural immunity. It's like, okay, I still can't drink certain beverages or I can't smell fabric softener without thinking that it's rotten and disgusting because I fucking had COVID and had that natural immunity from it. So fuck you. So anyway, I have a lot of pent up anger about that. And it just, as a result, I kind of think that one of the reasons why I can't really empathize or sympathize with Sasha as a character is because of that. Like, is it because we're supposed to sympathize with her that I just simply can't? Probably. And so then there's other things that kind of, I don't know, she goes on to talk about her cousin James and how he was in quarantine for, I think, 9 years, and then his house caught fire, but it was all an illusion by the stay-home company to get him outside. And as we know from the end of the episode, that is a calculated ploy to get him out of the house and into the real world because he was so afraid to leave the house, just as Sasha is afraid to leave her space and reintegrate into the new society post pandemic and everything. And like, those are all compelling elements and everything. And it does inform the character of Sasha pretty well because she says that he called her from the outside to tell her that it was okay. And she didn't believe him. She couldn't hear him as himself. Like, she was like, he sounded different. She's very paranoid of that. And then she also references offhand, which I think that this was pretty good. She references offhand that, oh yeah, you got my dad to leave too and everything. And she kind of scoffs at that and says like, I'm so happy I didn't fall for that. And it's just, it's really, I mean, it's tragic because it is this character that is suffering. She's suffering because of her own insecurities and her own fears and everything, and not being able to take that leap and everything. It's just marred by my real life experiences and everything. So this is when Zen gets frantic and he starts to beg her to leave. And she says that it should be her choice. And she says that it shouldn't be wrong to want to stay and be safe in your own house and everything. And again, like that, I don't know. It just feels a little bit hollow and I can't really connect with the character for a variety of reasons that I've yelled at about in this episode. But then we're kind of winding down. Wow, we're almost to the end. So the alarm starts blaring and Zen is even more frantic and tells her that it's not a trick. It's not a ruse. You need to leave right now because the pandemic has been over for years. Vaccines have come out. People have been rebuilding society and everything. And it's over and everything. You need to leave right now. And then there's a point where, like, this solidifies that I just don't like Sasha as a character because she yells about, she says, like, I know my rights, which just triggers me into remembering all of the dipshit videos of people not wearing masks at businesses and stuff. Like, it's some big gotcha thing. Like, no, it's a fucking private business. Like, you know, they have the right to impose any kind of things. You don't have, like, you don't have a God-given right to shop at fucking Costco. Anyway, so after all of this, as the alarm's blaring, Zen then, I think, shuts down the alarm and then reads a statement from Stay Homes that it basically explains that they're shutting the division due to the fact that everyone's out and everything's normal, and that due to Sasha's unwillingness to leave on her own, she's seen as a threat to the new society in no uncertain terms. She's not, I guess, in kind of a bleaker words, she's not worthy of being reintegrated into society. And as a result, she's going to be locked in there permanently. And then Zen reveals that Nia has been outside for 10 years and Sasha denied her calls from the outside because she didn't believe that it was her. She's constructed this whole idea in her head that they have this pact that she, that Nia never broke, and that she is going to be that, that they're going to come out together and everything. And at this moment, this is probably the most poignant and kind of emotionally resonant moment here, is because as they're talking about Nia being outside for 10 years, we get this voiceover of all the messages that Nia left for her. And I think that it's just beautiful and haunting and tragic, because it is encompassing, it is demonstrating to us all of the life that Sasha has missed out on because she is so unprepared and unwilling to accept that the threat is over. So we hear Nia talking about how her wedding was really beautiful, and talks about how she named her baby, I can't remember the name, but, it's just so tragic that Sasha has missed out on so much because she can't allow herself to, be emotionally free or emotionally ready to, escape her prison, essentially. And so Zen talks about how there's no one is in their stay houses anymore. No one is in their stay homes. There's no one left. And she's the only one that's still there, which I think is really interesting and compelling, because she's the single holdout who's been in quarantine for 20 years. And it's just really interesting to me. And so Zen sympathizes at the closing of the episode. He sympathizes with Sasha and tells her that, as if a bit of consolation, that he was able to convince stay homes to give her a pool. And just, it's kind of a weirdly haunting and disturbing that it basically changes the window view to be in an in-ground pool. And it's just, it's kind of weirdly haunting. And then Zen's final line is, I hope you enjoy your forever stay. And then I think Sasha's final line is, can Nia come? And it's just, I kind of feel like that's her regressing more into this whole idea that this truth of her reality, or the reality that she has presented herself in the form of everyone still being in lockdown and everyone still being quarantined and everything, instead of realizing the actual reality of the world, that the world is back to normal and she's missing out on it. That's her, I don't know. That's her kind of tragic end, tragic Twilight Zone-y, Black Mirror-esque ending. And that's the end of Sasha. kind of dark words there, but that's the end of it. So by the second half of the episode, I did get more in tune with Uzo Aduba's performance. Just in that it was too much of a disconnect for me in those early scenes. The first half of the episode just felt a little too kind of theatrical, and the kind of setup of it, the dialogue and everything, wasn't as compelling or detailed as I would have liked it to be. So that's my review of Sasha. So far of the four episodes that I've reviewed, this is definitely my least favorite of the four. So take with you, take that how you make it. Let me know what you thought of this episode and this review. And hopefully I didn't, alienate too many people. But before I go, I just want to say once again, check out patreon.com/obsessiveviewer, where I have a bunch of bonus content at different tiers and everything. So check that out. And also at the $10 level, you get access to the rest of this bonus episode series without having to wait week to week for it to come out on the main feed. And also check out my other podcasts, Obsessive Viewer and Tower Junkies. And so that'll do it for this bonus episode of Anthology. And I just want to say thank you once again. And hope you guys have a good and safe day. Thanks, guys. And now, here's a short clip from our Patreon exclusive RSS feed. To hear the full clip and more exclusive Patreon content, go to patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and become a patron at the minimum rate of $1 per month. Thank you and enjoy. In the first episode, that first pilot episode, that pilot episode's actually kind of rough. The first episode, there's a big speech about the statue of the founder of the town, and its placement and everything. There's a big speech, and people are outspoken at the speech, at this gathering. And one lady says, well, why does it have to be, she says something like, why does it have to be a statue of him? Why not a statue of, and she says like Jenna Marbles and, or my cat or something like that. Just really just very, just kind of playing to the cheap seats kind of thing. There, it doesn't really feel like there's a lot of effort in that. Like, oh, okay, well, let's name like an internet personality to get that. And like, there's a little bit of that, like forced pop culture references that just don't really feel earnest or earned in the show.
Anthology is edited and produced by Matt Hurt and presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For a full archive of our episodes, go to anthologypod.com/archive. You can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod and follow the show on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. If you enjoy the show, please take a couple minutes to leave us a rating and a quick review on Apple Podcasts. This is the easiest way to support what we do, and all it costs is a little bit of your time. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can make a PayPal donation at anthologypod.com/donate or support us on Patreon for recurring donations and access to commentary tracks and B-roll audio recorded exclusively for patrons at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Every donation goes toward paying the fees to keep the podcast running and is greatly appreciated. Official Anthology merch, including shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more, can be found in The Obsessive Viewer's TeePublic store. You can find a link to the store in the show notes of this episode and at anthologypod.com/donate. Or you can simply search for Obsessive Viewer at teepublic.com. For information about The Obsessive Viewer's annual live event showcasing short horror films from local filmmakers, check out shocktoberinirvington.com. And for an archive of all our events, as well as news about potential future events, head over to obsessiveviewer.com/live. For more podcast content, you can find our flagship movie and TV review and discussion show, The Obsessive Viewer Podcast, at obsessiveviewer.com and on Twitter at @obsessiveviewer. You can also find Tower Junkies, a podcast where Matt and co-host Tiny share their love of all things Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower series, over at TowerJunkiesPod.com and at TowerJunkiesPod on Twitter. And finally, check out The Secular Perspective, Tiny's side project podcast, which tackles current events and life's big questions from the perspective of secular hosts Chad and Amanda at TheSecularPerspective.com. Bumper music for this podcast comes courtesy of As Good As It Gets, which can be found at facebook.com/asgoodasitgetsband. You can also find As Good As It Gets music on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Kitty!
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
America. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.